Mr. President, Prime Minister Hasina, Director General Dr. Margaret Chan, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the World Health Organization and this Assembly have set the standard for global cooperation in pursuit of better health. For decades, you've established ambitious goals such as eradicating smallpox, and you have rallied the world to accomplish those goals. It's an honor to join you today. I had the privilege of addressing this Assembly in 2005 when my wife Melinda and I were new to global health. At that time, I shared my optimism about the future of global health. The world was finally starting to use all of its power to innovate to solve its most difficult problem, the fact that billions of people still don't have the chance to lead a healthy, productive life. In these last 6 years, that optimism has continued to grow. A recent important book called Getting Better by the economist Charles Kinney shows that life is getting better. It's getting better even faster than economic figures show us. To build this argument, he looks carefully at a series of key quality of life indicators, including childhood survival, length of average lifetime, school enrollment, and levels of violence. I hope this book gets the acclaim it deserves. It proves that the work this Assembly has been leading is having an enormous impact. We need the people who make funding decisions and set policy to understand the success stories that are being achieved. I believe that if they understand it, they will allow us to make even more progress for more people. The opportunity for this progress is the reason I've devoted my full-time work to the Gates Foundation. Health and development is the most rewarding work I can imagine, and my wife, Melinda, and I will devote the rest of our lives to it. When I was a teenager, I was captivated by computers because I believed they would change the world. I couldn't predict the exact future, but I was amazed at this sense of possibility to improve and empower. Over the years, though, as I saw a lot of change taking root, I also saw glimpses of things that hadn't changed. In 1994, visiting sub-Saharan Africa, I could see that the disease and poverty were still holding back millions of people's lives. In 1998, my wife and I read about rotavirus. I learned that it was the leading cause of diarrhea in young children, and it caused over 500,000 deaths every year. Our first child had been born, but for us, we didn't have to worry about this, because in the United States, children don't die from diarrhea. We took for granted that this was the case on a worldwide basis, but that wasn't true. We'd never had to learn about rotavirus. We'd never heard of it, and our daughter was not at risk from it. It was sobering to realize that the kind of innovation and health tools that we took for granted were not available for everyone. When I began to understand how billions of people are deprived of these benefits, it made me angry. And that's when I decided that not only my time, but also all the wealth I'd acquired would be used to confront that inequity. Years ago, in starting Microsoft, we had a very ambitious vision, a computer for everyone. Now I join you in seeking to achieve an even more important vision, which is good health for every human being. One special role of the Gates Foundation is to help spur innovation on these health problems. Our priorities are your priorities: to make motherhood safer, to ensure that newborns survive their first 30 days, to provide children with a nutritious diet. We see what you see every day, that diseases like HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria can destroy communities. Along with great partners like the Global Fund, we want to help you diagnose, treat, and above all, prevent disease. As we think about how to deploy our resources most effectively, one intervention in particular stands out: vaccines. Today, I want to talk to you about how you can provide the leadership to make this decade the decade of vaccines. Vaccines are an extremely elegant technology. They can be expensive, they are easy to deliver, and they can provide lifelong protection from disease. At Microsoft, we dreamed about powerful and simple technologies. Well, vaccines are such a technology. And I dream about what the world will look like as we take full advantage of vaccines. During this decade, we can achieve a lot. Early in the decade, we can achieve the eradication of polio. By the end of the decade, we'll have 5 or more vaccines available to all the children of the world. And finally, by the end of this decade, every country can have a delivery system to make sure that those vaccines are getting out to every single child. So to achieve these goals, we need to focus on strong immunization systems. In January of last year, I talked about accelerating the progress on vaccines. I have a sense that there's strong momentum. I'm excited that global health leaders are now collaborating to put together a specific global vaccine action plan. That plan will be the blueprint for the decade of vaccines, and it will be a plan that will depend on all of us to do our best work. The greatest asset of every country is the energy and talent of its people. Disease saps that energy and squanders that talent. Repeated intestinal infections stunt children's growth and reduce their cognitive development. Meningitis causes permanent neurologic disability. Malaria prevents people from being productive. Over a lifetime, high rates of malaria cause substantially reduced earnings. To solve these problems, we can use vaccines. So they're one of the best investments we can make to have healthy people who can drive thriving economies. As we free billions of people from this burden of sickness, we will unleash more human potential than ever before. Let me give you one example of where vaccines can make a huge difference. This year, over 20 million children will have severe pneumonia, and over 1 million will die. But even when the disease doesn't take the child's life, it can affect the child's and its family's future. For the survivors, the sickness reduces their chance of growing up healthy and strong. For the parents, it means going into debt. Now that we have 2 vaccines against the leading cause of pneumonia, it's possible for us to reduce this burden and allow countries to tap into the full energy and nurture their talent. Pneumonia vaccines are a symbol of one of the most exciting trends in global health: the drive towards full equity in delivering innovations. In the past, Innovations were developed first to the rich countries, and it often took a decade or two before they were introduced to the poor countries that need them the most. But that is changing. These new pneumonia vaccines were available in developing countries only a few years after they were approved for use in developed countries. The same is true of the new rotavirus vaccine. Now, of course, we need to take that approval and take it forward into full delivery. And it's the Gavi Alliance partnering with all of you in this room that can help make sure that that's possible. We have a wonderful recent success around this. Last December, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger made history when they introduced a brand new vaccine for meningitis A that was developed specifically for use in Africa. This all started back in 1996 when the deadliest meningitis epidemic in memory tore through 25 countries in Africa, infecting over 250,000 people. Meningitis strikes with frightening speed. A healthy child can be playing with friends 1 minute and be dead literally a few hours later. In 1996, the only weapon against meningitis was barely useful at all. It was a short-lasting vaccine that wasn't effective with young children. Health officials used it after outbreaks, and they called it a medicine after death. They demanded a better vaccine that could prevent outbreaks. The WHO worked with our foundation and PATH to create the Meningitis Vaccine Project, and the partner set a target of 50 cents for the vaccine. That would make it affordable. But producing a vaccine at that lower price required a new approach. So the project worked with the Dutch biotech company to get key materials, arranged technology transfer from the United States, and then partnered with the Serum Institute in India to provide the low-cost manufacturing. We've already seen great results from the use of this vaccine. In Burkina Faso, in the first 16 weeks this year, there's only been a single case, which is a dramatic reduction. It's too soon to declare victory, but this early data makes me very hopeful. For centuries, meningitis terrorized a region of over 400 million people, and as we use this vaccine and get full coverage, we can end that terror. We need to continue to create and deliver more vaccines, but we can see a very bright future as we pull this together. To keep the promise of equitable health access, we need these vaccines to be priced as low as possible for the LDCs. Our foundation is working with a number of manufacturers to make sure that this happens. I believe we'll be able to take the combined price of critical vaccines, in particular pentavalent, pneumococcus, and rotavirus, and reduce the cost to be half by 2016. Now, delivering these vaccines requires a huge commitment. Many countries are already doing a great job. Bangladesh, whose great health story you just heard, Nicaragua, Rwanda, and Vietnam routinely reach about 90% of their infants. But there are many places where vaccination rates are very low. Almost every country can do better, and a number of countries must do better to achieve the potential of the decade of vaccines. I know as a leader of the health ministry, you have a very difficult job. You have many different issues, all of which are relate to life and death. But I do believe that as you look at your priorities, running the immunization system well will emerge as something very, very important. And it'll emerge as something where your leadership will be decisive. The best immunization systems work because the leaders of the health ministry hold themselves accountable for the results and create a system that tracks results on an ongoing basis. There's efforts to diagnose problems as they arise, to innovate to solve them, and spread the best ideas. Let me give an example. Just a few years ago, Bihar State in India had one of the lowest vaccination rates in the world, under 30%. Then its political leader, Chief Minister Nitish Kumar, made it clear that he expected change. So even though Bihar is a very challenging place, he changed it so it's no longer one of the least vaccinated. The vaccination rate has now more than doubled, over 60%, and there's a plan to take it much higher. I visited Chief Minister Kumar a few months ago, and his understanding of where the immunization system was working, where it wasn't, was impressive. He had high expectations of everybody who worked for him. I was glad to see that this work led to the chief ministers being very popular. The people understood the impact of a leader who takes such a basic system and makes it work very well. Examples like this should inspire us all to provide more leadership. Back in 2005, you set two critically important immunization goals that we have yet to reach. Let us renew the pledge that no country should be below 90% coverage. Let us rededicate ourselves to the idea that no district should be below 80% coverage. We can meet these goals with your leadership, and that will be critical to really making this the decade of vaccines. As a global health community, we need to shine light on the countries doing the best work. We need to know who the innovators are so those ideas can spread. Starting next year, our foundation will bestow an award on the organization that makes the most innovative contribution to the decade of vaccines. We'll look at people who are innovating in science, who are innovating in delivery, who are innovating in the funding. And every January, in my foundation annual letter, I'll talk about that winner to make sure that the pioneering global health leaders get the credit they deserve. Our fight against polio proves just how powerful vaccine technology can be, but it also demonstrates that it's only effective as the quality of delivery. 23 years ago, here in this building, you resolved to wipe polio off the planet. And now we're 99% of the way there. We have a 13-step vaccine that's so easy to administer that even I've done it many times. And we have one of the most impressive delivery efforts that global health has ever seen. It's fantastic that over 100 countries no longer have polio. Even in very difficult conditions like those in Afghanistan, immense progress has been made. And so far, we've only had one case in Afghanistan this year. But our progress has not taken us all the way, and eradication is not guaranteed. We have tools that can be improved. We need to avoid virus spreading back into countries where it's been eliminated. And of course, we have countries where we have still have virus continuing to circulate despite all the many campaigns over the years. We also have a challenge to make sure that the program is assertive of the funding to do all the campaigns and improve vaccination systems. Now, these challenging facts do raise the question of whether we have the full commitment to eradicate polio. Are the donor countries ready to close the funding gap and see the job through to the end? Are the countries where polio still exists ready to take extraordinary action to reach every child with the vaccine? We have a choice. We can keep doing what we've been doing, but that would mean continuing to miss a lot of the children who are vulnerable. Or we can do more. We can go back and step up the fundraising. We can intensify the campaigns, and we can do what it takes to get to zero cases. By making that choice, we will prove that people are capable of coming together to solve complex worldwide problems. The eradication of polio will be a great victory for this assembly. You started the courageous fight against this disease, and with your leadership, we will be able to finish it. And that will allow us to move on to other very, very ambitious goals. There are a great number of wonderful leaders in this polio campaign. One who I respect a great deal is Dr. Mohamed Pape, who directs Nigeria's effort. A few years ago, Nigeria was one of the most troublesome spots on the polio map. It had hundreds of cases. But Dr. Pape, along with global polio partners, President Goodluck Jonathan, the Minister of Health, and other people in the ministry, rallied government and traditional leaders around the cause. Dr. Pape told me that his agency makes a point of identifying poor-performing states publicly. That's the kind of accountability that leads to results. Last year, thanks to this nationwide effort, polio cases were down over 90%. Now, Nigeria's leaders still have a lot of work ahead of them, but clearly they have turned the polio program around. During my last visit to Nigeria, Dr. Pate asked me a small favor. He hoped I'd be willing to sign his daughter's school yearbook. I was more than willing, of course, and I want Dr. Pate's daughter to know this. I admire her father very much. Someday I will introduce my children to him, and I hope at that time it'll be where we're celebrating that there's no longer any more polio in Nigeria. We have a great opportunity in this campaign, and we need to seize it. If we don't seize it in the years ahead, we will have setbacks. This entire decade is an opportunity, and we can achieve the ambitious goals for the decade of vaccines. Everybody will have to do their part. Donor countries will have to increase investments in vaccines and immunization systems, even if they cope with budget crises. The Gavi pledging meeting coming up in June gives all of you and your governments an opportunity to show strong support. With generosity, we'll have the chance to prevent 4 million deaths by 2015 and 10 million deaths by 2020. The pharmaceutical industry must make sure that we have these new vaccines and they're affordable for poor countries through a commitment to tiered pricing. And for all 193 member states, you must make vaccines a high priority in your health systems to ensure that all your children have access to existing vaccines now and to the new vaccines that have recently become available. Our foundation is committed to working with all our partners, civil society, donors, drug companies, and national governments to help you do these difficult but necessary things. I feel optimistic about this because we've seen many examples of leadership. For example, British Prime Minister David Cameron, while passing the toughest austerity budget in his country's history, maintained his commitment to development spending. He made a commitment to double the UK's contribution to the polio campaign. Another example of innovation at work is that's done by the Serum Institute in India, led by Dr. Cyrus Poonawalla. It's really made huge advances in providing low-cost vaccines. They developed that meningitis vaccine. They provide more measles vaccines than anyone else. They are driving down the price of pentavalent vaccines. And in the years ahead, they have plans to provide inexpensive diarrhea and pneumonia vaccines. So leaders like these, along with Nitish Kumar, Mohammed Pate, and so many others, have demonstrated that leadership can understand, overcome tough challenges. With your involvement, we can make this the decade in which we take full advantage of vaccines. By doing that, we'll be able to build an entirely new future based on the understanding that global health is a cornerstone of global prosperity. It will be a great challenge to do this, but it will be one of the most important and impactful things we've ever done. Thank you.